systems, I feel that we are seeing a conversion on belief, that there are some people who are giving up on the inherent belief system of this country. They feel that it's
they've given up on politics and they're going into pure
chaos.
It's almost anarchy type, you know, like,
correct.
You know, we believe this is our political messiah, whichever side you're on, and they're going to support that die hard no matter what, to the point where people are carrying machine guns at protests because they're actually building militias.
Welcome to the QR Lab. My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with...
Amr Zeki. How are you, my friend?
The Q.
R.
And we're on a quest to try to understand our reality, but we're also questioning reality. So hence the name of this podcast, the QR Lab. We are very pleased to be here this day with you, and hopefully on your way to work, you're listening, and we can talk about something, you know, relatively light, or we can talk about the fact that we are on the precipice of a national crisis. Amr, you've written some stuff on... belief systems, and I think that's very appropriate now for us to discuss. So could you please read what you were...
Yes, very briefly, you know, we've been struggling to understand people's perspectives, differences and diversity in people's opinions and understanding of nature of reality, right? We've talked about belief systems.
Exactly. I mean, a belief system is an ideology or set of principles that helps us to interpret our everyday reality. So what...
Yes, exactly.
What conversation could be more important and appropriate to this podcast?
And it's very pragmatic, too. Now, one of the things I recently wrote was I simply asked myself a question, what is the structure of belief? Now, I don't claim to have the answers or even have done a full analysis, but I just wrote something brief, an excerpt I'm going to read that kind of gives a little bit of a framework for a further discussion. So here we go. What is this hidden structure of belief? When did it begin and why is it there? In order to function in life, even if we just limit this discussion to our material lives, in order to function beyond the basic instinctual animal needs, we need some guiding principle or framework to govern our actions. If this framework did not exist, then we are mere animals living from moment to moment according to instinct and natural law. But to step outside of the animal kingdom, we enter a realm of possibilities, a space that demands our full attention, and a decision tree that is preordained and that is organized according to some logical system or worldview. It is precisely because our consciousness is higher than that of plants and animals that we move beyond the purely instinctual and into the domain of what-ifs, in other words, the domain of multiple possibilities. And in order to handle and entertain so many different probabilities or possibilities, a structure is required that is there to fully organize, assess, choose, and or respond to the manifold options available to us. The structure of belief, at least in its simplest such structure, is that which simply exists to provide the template upon which to guide precise and pragmatic responses to specific life demands. This simple structure is then further built upon and expanded in ever more complex belief systems, all designed to serve a higher purpose or goal. Such a system is then further modified according to needs and cultural and/or religious tenets, which invoke ethics and a moral order to life. Indeed, the structure of any belief system is inherently unique and complex and exists to serve life's needs, which never cease to change.
Quite powerful stuff. You've clearly thought about this quite a bit. When you think about beliefs or belief systems, I mean, there are categories, correct?
Religious,
political, societal, philosophical, spiritual.
Economical. I mean, there's many.
Right. So why is it that we are not able to see the world all the same way? This must be of benefit. There must be some evolutionary benefit in us all seeing things a little bit differently and approaching things differently. The fact that we have created multiple religions. When I say we, I mean human beings have created multiple religions. Although there are some dominant ones that are the majority of people are following.
Right.
So... Where do we sit on this idea that The highest form, the highest belief system.
Right. Keep going. You got this.
Yeah. Diversity and conflict.
Right.
What
so,
are you showing me here?
Well, not to interrupt, because you actually asked a fundamental question here, which actually I also spent time thinking about. Diversity in nature and in creation or in human consciousness has so many benefits because we see the world differently. We come up with solutions to problems, right? Think about this. Just pick any given problem, problem X. Now, if you have three people looking at it, you're only going to come up with a limited multiplicity of solutions. If you have 1,000 people looking at it who have diverse levels of understanding and experiences, you're going to come with like an infinite number of solutions, right? So clearly, there is a benefit to seeing the world differently, right? However, as I've written here, diversity also perhaps is the seed for conflict. And this is a double-edged sword. Like many things in life that have pleiotropy and multiple purposes, there is a benefit and there is a harm to everything. It's almost like a given technology. And, you know, I'm not really prepared to read anything here. I mean, we certainly can, you know, but here's an image, for example. I drew a little picture that kind of summarizes. So on the left-hand side, we have, as you were saying, a diversity of political, you know, physical, religious, financial, intellectual, moral, philosophical, technological. There's a diversity of things that exist and that we produce and are aware of and or believe in, right? Then it goes through the membrane of the human psyche, right? That particular group of human psyches or beliefs or even as an individual. And then it leads to three potential outcomes. One is ambivalence or suspicion, meaning you kind of have mixed feelings about it. Or you're kind of suspicious about it, but you don't really do anything about it. Number two, conflict. Number three, peace. Those are really our three options. And so when you take, for example, a particular political system that is based on a particular, say, human worldview, and it goes through the human experience of that human psyche and it gets processed, the product of that is ambivalence, suspicion, conflict, or peace. And that applies to every system that you just mentioned. And I'm glad I drew a picture because now I actually can look at it and not read what I wrote. Do you see what I'm saying?
Correct. You know, recently I saw Dune Part 2.
Oh, I got to see that.
In Frank Herbert's novel, there's a overwhelming suspicion about how belief systems are implanted and constructed. To the point in his novel, he essentially says that belief systems were implanted in various cultures by a Bene Gesserit order,
mm-hmm.
a kind of like a
religious order, right?
Like a religious order or Jedi order. And they've implanted these ideas so that there will be followers, that there will be people. They create prophecies, and these prophecies can be met. And once they're met, that creates their, you know, again, it's difficult to discuss exactly what it is that he is doing in that novel. He is casting doubt on belief systems, question these belief systems.
Right, right.
We find that people don't. It's actually quite hilarious in the film when Paul Atreides is trying to tell the followers, it's not me. And this only further incites them into believing it's him because only the true Messiah will be humble. Oh. And this is actually taken
a paradox,
from...
It's kind of a paradox.
Right. It's actually hilariously shown in the movie The Life of Brian, where he's trying to tell them, look, I'm not the Messiah. I'm telling you I'm not the Messiah. And somebody says, only the true Messiah will deny his divinity. And he's like, okay, what chance does that give me? All right, fine. I am the Messiah. And of course they say, he is the Messiah.
That's hilarious.
It's actually a hilarious scene, but it's so true about how once people believe something, and even in the face of objective data where somebody is telling them to the contrary, it doesn't penetrate that membrane you discussed.
Yeah.
You can't get it in there.
Or the membrane actually in the, it's like a chemical reaction in the process of processing that system or information produces a product you may not like, right? So let's say two groups of people receive the same belief system. They may process it differently such that you get conflict. But another two groups process it so you get peace, right? So it really, I think what it comes down to, and this is a little abstract and a little maybe difficult, is it comes down to people's consciousness and how well developed it is. Now, people may listen to that and say, well, what makes you think that your consciousness is well developed? I'm not saying it is necessarily, you know, as well developed as it should be. And I know for sure it's not. But it's well developed enough that I can have that thought, right? In fact, there is such a thing that people's levels of consciousness, that your level of awareness about reality and what is possible may have not evolved.
You're demonstrating insight.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that, in fact, shows you do have
to some
awareness.
Level.
You do have consciousness.
Correct, to some right. level. But think about, you know, whether the listener believes in, you know, religion or prophetic revelation. Think about the people that we look up to, you know, Mother Teresa and Mandela and Gandhi and even the prophets, right? People, even people who don't believe in religion, they kind of look at them as people who are, you know, they're sincere and they're trying to fix their society, right? They're coming up with moral order and they're saying, don't do these terrible things because it has consequences. Try to do these things, which is better. You know, turn the other cheek, show mercy, be patient, right? So people appreciate that, whether or not they believe it came from God or not. They appreciate that there are people who are sort of, you know, on the human decency spectrum, they're extremely decent, right? They're giving, they're generous, they're loving, they're compassionate. You know, they take the downtrodden and they do something about it, right? We instinctively respect that. So even if you're a greedy person who is totally not into that, you respect that. You recognize it as something like valuable. You may not agree with it or do it, but there's a deep part of you that appreciates that. That is a higher level of consciousness, because that understands something about the nature of reality that the purely materialist simply does not and cannot see. Now, I know this gets into a little bit of a theological or spiritual spectrum, but this is the template, the example of what it means to have belief systems and a level of consciousness that restricts you from seeing things in a broader way or in a deeper way.
In the past, these belief systems would be transmitted through families. Specifically, let's talk about the mechanism of transfer. It would be through song. It would be through story. It would be through community. Now, belief systems are being spread through the ultimate Satan, social media.
<That's right.
laughs> I mean, we're
That's
a part
right.
of that. We're a part of this.
Followed by an evil left, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. We are part of this right now. We are two podcasters. We are questioning belief systems. We are questioning reality. You can take a look at all of our previous podcasts and see an inherent desire to want to spread information, but also we're trying to understand it and we're looking for feedback. Now, that does take time to build that. I think that's the most constructive use of social media. Personally, of course, I'm saying that that's how we're doing
sublimation
it.
Into the art, right?
Beautiful. Well said. And that's can be referenced in our in a previous podcast.
Right.
However, I feel that people will morph and change once they achieve a certain viewership. They don't want to lose their 2 million, 3 million followers. So they will continue to reinforce maybe even narratives that are antithetical to true understanding. I think you and I both know Jordan Peterson is sort of an example of that in my mind. Even Sam Harris to some degree.
Yeah.
These are people that I listen to. Joe Rogan is probably the best example of somebody who has compromised his own belief systems because of the types of viewers he has. So for example, there was a very well-known meme where Joe Biden is slamming Biden for dementia type issues. And somebody on his show fact checks him in real time and says, oh no, actually it was Trump who said that. And then as soon as Trump says it, he kind of drops it, doesn't reinforce it. Didn't go into the fact that Trump actually looks rather deranged and demented in many of his discussions. We're pointing to Joe Biden saying, look at him. He's demented. He's old. He can't be our president. I feel that this is not even a choice. We have two very unfortunate choices And it comes down again to, it seems like in my lifetime, every single election has come down to the choice between the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
Why am I devolving this conversation into the political realm? Because I think it goes hand in hand with this concept of belief systems.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
We have right now two candidates that actually have a very different set of belief systems. And that can be evidenced by their history. So no matter what you want to say about Joe Biden, he's a career politician. He has supported positions that both you and I don't agree with in any way, shape, or form. But he has been essentially a dedicated servant to public affairs. Now, has he benefited? Has he made money off of this? Of course he has.
Yeah.
There's no question. So that's fine. But there is a inherent viewpoint that he has. Now, the problem with Joe Biden is that his actions go against much of what that overwhelming viewpoint, that the belief system that most of us share and agree with that spectrum of the political party. Contrast this to the behaviors and actions of his opponent and what he would call his predecessor. This is a man whose belief system is entirely centered around some seemingly not innocuous mechanisms of behavior. He is vile and threatening. He has made horrible comments.
Yeah.
He denigrates.
Seems people. Unstable.
He seems unstable. He seems scary, but this works because he is the Joker. He's this element of chaos.
It is an element of
people
chaos.
People are, I think that they're, and this is why I want to talk about belief systems. I feel that we are seeing a conversion on belief, that there are some people who are giving up on the inherent belief system of this country. They feel that
they've given up on politics and they're going into pure
chaos.
It's almost anarchy type, you know, like,
correct.
You know, we believe this is our political messiah, whichever side you're on. And they're going to support that die hard no matter what, to the point where people are carrying machine guns at protests because they're actually building militias, which is a little
It is clear to me upon looking over hundreds and hundreds of Trump supporter, MAGA supporters, interviews where, look, these are not interviews where they're just trying to denigrate them or make them look stupid like Jordan Klepper does. He does a lot of that. But also TYT does hundreds of interviews with these MAGA. And it's important for us to, we were talking about this before the podcast.
Yeah.
It's so important for us. It's hard for me to hear what these people are saying because I want to interrupt them and go, that's not correct. You're wrong. Here's the facts. I can show you. It would be like if you and I were discussing a scientific concept and I had the data and you're just talking
based on opinion,
based on an opinion or a theory that you have. And I say, Amr, I have these papers here.
Sure.
Let me show you the evidence
or experiments you ran.
And then you start looking at it and you start trying to deconstruct the evidence. Now,
that is
a different discussion.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Actually, that's where you draw the line.
That's where you draw the line.
Because if somebody is faced with information and data that ought to get them to change their mind, right? And they don't, this is where the line is. Because then you are in a realm of, you're beyond science now. You're into pure, unadulterated a belief system that has something to do and is wrapped up with your identity and your sense of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Your psychological, it's an assault on the sacredness of what you believe. Now, if scientists were like that, we'd have no airplanes, no boats, no cell phones, no satellites, no biomedical advances, right? Because then scientists would be having religious wars, right? So that is kind of, but it's actually more complex than that.
It is.
Because in science, you're dealing with objective things that you can measure. Not in this situation, because this situation is multidimensional and complex, as I was saying earlier. Even what I read, what I was describing earlier, is an extremely distilled and simplified way of looking at a belief system. I was simply talking about its evolution, right? Why we went from, you know, being instinctive animals into, oh, realizing there is time and that we have choices. And because we have choices, we kind of have to come up with a way of giving us a vista into different tunnels of possibilities, right? This is way deeper and more complex because it has to do with the earliest part of your human psychological development. What we talked about before, you know, it's almost like your intrinsic knowledge and the cognitive dissonance that comes out of having this sort of, you know, innate belief or intrinsic knowledge. What you're actually talking about is a form of cognitive dissonance, because they can hold a certain belief, right, and suspend reality or suspend data or information that's to the contrary. So this is a complexity, is when you're dealing with that situation and you cannot resolve it diplomatically, then there's only two other options. Meaning diplomatic, I mean by talking and compromise. The only other two options are just avoidance or war. Or we said resistance, which can be kinetic or non-kinetic.
It seems that the avoidance modality will ultimately result in war, unless these Correct. Two ideas can be... If you and I disagree,
right.
Fine, we're just not going to talk ever again. Fine.
Right.
Okay, but what if you're spreading it and I'm spreading it, and now we start Correct. To bump up against each other?
That's right.
Or we have to work together, and right. we have inherent... Right? It's going to happen.
Conflict.
Where conflict will occur.
That's right.
I want to go back to what you were talking about and reference Tali Sherot. It's a great book that you gave me years ago about people's emotional dependency on changing their belief system.
Mm-hmm.
If you can resonate with somebody at an emotional level, you're more likely to convince them.
That's right.
But if you resonate with them by showing them the data and statistics, that doesn't move the needle at all.
Absolutely not.
So it tells you that we are very much wired by our midbrain still, rather than our
for
higher
sure,
functions.
For sure. In fact, there's a book that you just reminded me of by Oren Claff. It's called Pitch Anything. And this guy is he's famous for raising billions of dollars for anybody who hires him. You want to build an airport, you hire this guy, right? So, and he talks about this issue of, also Malcolm Gladwell talked about this in Blink, right, to some degree. He talked about this as well, which is, you know, this idea that when you first meet somebody, you get an impression, and that impression is not based on data or intellectual analysis. It's based on almost like a flight or flight response. It's the lizard brain response, right? And that response is emotional, right? Is this person dangerous?
It's something you mentioned earlier. Remember the baby you were at a soccer game and this baby
yeah.
looked at you and
yeah.
was fascinated.
Yeah.
But let's just say they looked at me and started crying, right?
Which
right.
they would do.
But it's interesting that the response, even at that rudimentary level where this brain is developing, has the ability to look at one and find joy or look at another face and find...
It's instinctual.
It's
right.
instinctual.
Right.
Now, we will probably not know that in our lifetimes exactly, but I wanted to talk to you about something. Again, Tali Sherot just wrote this article in the New York Times, and it's called Why People Fail to Notice Horrors Around Them. And there's a film that's nominated for an Academy Award called The Zone of Interest. Now, again, it's another Holocaust film, but the film takes an approach where... It looks at the lives of the officers and their families that are living just adjacent to
I heard about this
concentration
film.
Camp.
Yeah.
So in the film is shot very simply, far away. There's not a lot of close-ups. They're showing the landscape a lot. But if you're looking, you might just see, you know, a guy fishing with his kids. But in the background, there's smoke. That smoke is the ashes of people that are being burned inside.
Man.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
But they don't bring any sort of attention to it. It just shows it.
Juxtaposition. Yeah.
The idea here is that the film is people have referenced this idea of the banality of evil, and it's showing you just how simple evil can be. You and I sitting here while horrors are going on just outside.
People of the lie. It's every day and
yes.
it's common.
And that I wanted to go into that because I finished that book and was stunned by it. I was particularly stunned by the discussions in the book about exorcisms.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me that he goes into that. And it seems like they're not connected, but they are absolutely connected. Very, very interesting book. I highly recommend it. Now, I wanted to... discuss in the context of global events, Israeli-Palestinian situation, where there are these facts, these numbers. If you don't agree that because the numbers coming out of Gaza are from the Hamas-led organization where they're saying more than 30,000 people have died, I remember when we were counting it by the tens and twenties, right?
Yeah.
As the reports were coming in, now it's by the hundreds and thousands. Like yeah. we're just rounding up to over 30,000.
Another banal, you know, people after a while, they get desensitized.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
They're like, oh, another 10,000, you know, and these are actual every single human being.
Where is your belief system?
Right.
You're telling me that this is okay?
But think about this. By the way,
somehow we have justified this.
Well, think about this.
Somehow we've justified this terror. We need to contain it and stop it immediately, but...
Exactly. Do you remember...
We're not able to.
Well, this is... Think about this. It's not just what's happening now. The Rwandan crisis.
Yes.
The Rohingya crisis... Excuse me, genocide. The Rwanda genocide. How many genocides do we in our lifetime have to live through, okay, before we say, where is the... You know what this tells you? It tells you... There is no world order. Our systems are broken and corrupted and are sick because the ultimate human crime is genocide. It is the apogee. It is the pinnacle of human crimes, which is to collectively punish and kill thousands upon thousands of peoples or millions of peoples for a specific political reason. It is the crime of crimes. And these are not my words or my opinion. This is the opinion of the Nuremberg trials, right? The agreed upon, you know, right now the International Court of Justice is looking at this, you know, as genocide. So, regardless who does the genocide, genocide is genocide.
Correct.
Regardless of what side you're on or what you believe. Because ultimately, regardless of what side, there are innocent people, even with the side you disagree with.
You can't look at sides because one side is going to justify their actions and say, no, I absolutely have to do this. We're defending ourselves.
Right, that's right.
This is part of our survival is to wipe out these people.
You know,
that was right. the reasoning behind the Rwandan genocide.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it's very problematic on a moral level. You know, you can look at yourself as a human being from multiple. You can look at yourself as a political animal. You can look at yourself as somebody of a certain religion and you're biased towards a certain worldview. Or you can look at yourself as a human being. And there are shared values and shared wants and desires, right? Even people who are quote-unquote bad, they still love their children, right? They still want the best for their families. So we have certain shared things. We have to put those above. And if you're in conflict, right, war is going to happen. If you're in conflict, you have to have a moral way you conduct your war, right? Meaning, once you've defeated the enemy, you have to stop. You cannot continue destroying, right? And just... Every animal and every child and elderly, everyone gets wiped out. You cannot do that, right? That goes beyond even the United States, right? When if you go to their military schools and you undergo, you know, it's called, what's it called? It's called just war theory, or they have certain codes of conduct that the United States Army in their manuals teaches all their soldiers. These are things you are allowed to do in war. These are things you are not allowed to do in war because of our own ethics as a nation, but also because of the Nuremberg, what we agreed upon, right? All of those are being violated. And in fact, in every genocide, it is being violated, regardless of who's conducting the genocide. That should be intolerable as a human being, no matter who you are. Absolutely intolerable. And the fact that world leaders are somehow unable to come together and put a stop to this shows you the depravity and the lack of agreed upon moral order on an international level. And really, we live in a jungle world, which operates like mafiosos. That's the fact. That's how the world operates. My territory, I'm the mafia boss, I do what I want, and I don't care about any of these rules. It's jungle war, jungle world.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Killers of the Flower Moon is a film that shows and depicts a type of genocide, a type of murder, that is occurring at such an accepted level by the people that are almost like these are not humans.
Right. Dehumanization.
Yes. Yeah. Once you start to dehumanize people, you don't believe that they are the same as you.
That's the roadway to genocide. That is the roadway to genocide.
That's how it happens.
Right.
That's how in Killers of the Flower Moon, for example, how the white settlers, for example, are so easily able to dismantle the Native Americans. They're doing it right there, just bullet to the head or poisoning them, just as if you would a dog, as if you, and what's interesting too, Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Lily Gladstone's character's Molly in this film, it seems like he actually loves her. But in the film, he's poisoning her. He's killing her because he wants to. They want to take her land. They want to take what's hers. But it's nothing to them. And the reason I bring it up in the context of mafia is because it's almost as if they are operating like a mafia. Like, for example, Scorsese has done so many of these films where he's showing gangsters committing violence or killing each other, and it's as if they're laughing and doing it and having a good time while they're doing it. There's a, as you said, a juxtaposition between the crime and how it's being conducted, an acceptance of murder. And it seems so simple when Scorsese's doing it. I think that there is some voyeuristic enjoyment that we get from watching them do this, but he is actually a pacifist. He is showing you how awful this behavior is.
Yeah.
To do what they're doing so easily, so simply.
Yeah.
For example, in the film Goodfellas, where he's stabbing some guy in the back of his trunk, and then they go and sit and have dinner with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Can you do this? Could you go murder somebody, stab him 100 times, and then just go sit and have pasta with your mom? My belief system won't allow that.
Well, yes, you can in one way. Can I answer it?
Yeah.
You reminded me of an anecdote of a person that you know, and I'm going to answer the question. You remember Faith Fitzgerald, God rest her soul?
Yes.
So one day, I think I was still a resident and was walking, you know, from, you know, across different buildings, and I ran into her. And we somehow started talking about genocide. I think there was something going on in the world. And I just asked her this question. I said, Faith, you know, you're a humanitarian, right? You know, you've given these wonderful lectures about the humanitarian aspect of medicine. You're very well versed in history. I said, let me ask you a question. How could any human being ever engage in such activity? It boggles the mind. And here's what she said. She said, oh, very simply. And she was lighting up a cigarette, by the way. She said, very simply. She said, you think of them as bacteria. And she said, as doctors, all of us hate bacteria. We're always trying to kill bacteria. Why? Because they're pathogens. So she said, genocide happens when you view the other as a pathogen. And she said, just like you give antibiotics, that's exactly how they feel. That's the psychological framework.
So,
now, that gets back to dehumanization. So when you ask me that question, that is how you... The only way you can do it as a human being is if you dehumanize people to the point where you view them as a pathogen.
Well, don't you think there's a problem then with our religions? When I say our religions, I mean the religions that are the main religions. For example, slavery is permitted in the Bible. It's mentioned numerous times as if it is absolutely acceptable. It's even mentioned throughout the... I believe in the Quran as well. You can correct me if I'm wrong. So we, in our belief systems, the ones that we believe in as a, you know, Judeo-Christian, let's see, even Islamic dominant world, I believe that at least over half the planet is either one of three religions.
I don't agree with that.
What I'm trying to say is the dehumanization may come just innately from us as human beings, even without belief systems, but is it also integrated
and
permitted in our religions?
No.
I think we can find examples where it is.
Well, not in the text and the way in the normative tradition. It's in when people use religion in perverse ways. And that happens in every religion. That is true. So if you're using things...
Or out of context. You take one or two lines without taking in the bigger framework of the understanding.
You can take any text in any way, and you can twist it and take it out of context to suit your purposes. This is a corruption that is not part of normative traditions. So it's really the sickness of the human heart that utilizes through deception and manipulation and corruption, whether it's science, technology, or religion, to implement a genocidal worldview that can only happen when you view others as dehumanized pathogens. That's what's going on, in my opinion.
I think people who look at religious texts, let's say, for example, Sam Harris and his discussion about the Quran, he frequently will draw quantitative differences between the Quran and the New Testament or even the Old Testament, and to the point of saying that the Quran is inherently more violent and produces a more violent society. That what I just said is his words. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally taken from things he has said.
Well, he's been debunked multiple times
by people.
Well,
it's not about debunking. But the point I'm trying to make here is that it is because he is looking at the text and trying to quantitate something that is not quantifiable.
Okay.
For example, the messages and the concepts in these books are not meant to be divided equally. There are some ideas that far exceed the overwhelming narrative than a few lines that may give some sort of tribute to martyrdom.
Well, let me. I partly see what you're saying, but I want to address the Sam Harris thing. So, Sam Harris, he first of all is not a theologian. Right, he doesn't actually have knowledge.
Again, he's not looking at at as a scientist, right?
I understand, like, but he's looking that's at like as... apples and oranges. So there's actually a guy who I haven't read his book, but I did hear an extensive interview with him on NPR. It was very interesting. He was a theological scholar, and he decided to actually quantify and count all the passages in the Old Testament, the Torah, the New Testament, and the Quran that have anything to do with violence. He collected them. He put them in a book and analyzed them. And then in this interview, he said, by far, by an overwhelming majority, the most violent book is the Torah/Old Testament. He said it's full of such, he said it's purely genocidal in some passages. Even it says, kill every living being, including all the animals. That's in the Testament. Whereas in the Quran, in the passages, and the New Testament has stuff too, but in the Quran, in the passages where it talks about war, it says, and when they stop fighting you, you stop fighting them. For God does not love those who are unjust. And you're not allowed to even cut down a tree. So you're not allowed to destroy the environment. You're not allowed to touch any kind of houses of worship. So the conflict, the war that is allowed is purely to strike equally to what you've been struck and not an inch more. That's very clearly written down. So for Sam Harris, in my opinion, is somebody who is completely biased and actually doesn't have knowledge. And so I completely dismiss him in my estimation. I'm happy to debate him live on this podcast if he so wishes. And with no preparation, by the way.
You hear that, Sam? You've been called out by the QR lab. that was really great. But Back to belief systems here. Back to why do people allow, and in the history of our beings, oppression, tyranny, war, savage murder, and ultimately even genocide, why these things have happened over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean,
allowed to happen. Why aren't they halted early?
It's because of us.
Why did we let 6 million Jewish people?
Because there's evil in us. That's a simple answer. Now,
it's not just that, right? We're letting it go on. Why do we let it go on?
Because the people who have the power are allowing it. Because you don't have the power to stop it.
So we feel powerless to stop it.
We can only do so much. Like, I've done what I can do to try and get my voice out there, right? From whatever I feel I can do within reason and the amount of time and resources that I have. I can probably do more, right? We can probably all do more. But do I have the power to go and open the borders and let food through and water and tell the airplanes and tanks to stop bombing? I don't have the power to do that, right? I'd have to go through, we'd have to go through political systems and protesting and change the laws. And
you'd probably get killed.
Well, that's fine. I mean, that's,
It's not, this is not a joke. It's serious.
Yeah, people, I mean, if it happens, it happens. That's what it is.
People are worried, and their own well-being and their own family is of utmost importance. So why get involved in something that...
Martin Luther King said, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And frankly, it will come to that one day, even in this country. And you and I are both worried about that. And that's how you started the podcast, right? National crisis. Now, the thing is, we have to speak the truth, and we really should not be afraid to speak the truth. And it's challenging because you're right. People are worried about their well-being, and that's very reasonable. You have obligations to your children, right? You need to be there for them and all that. But at some point, when the dragons are knocking at the door, we're going to have to unsheath the sword and start decapitating some heads.
Right.
And unfortunately, revolution may end up becoming a part of what happens if the Constitution and the rule of law, it's subverted And if that happens, it will completely tear this country apart. And this is extremely concerning, right?
You know, America has been involved in numerous conflicts that you and I have discussed in the past. They're well documented by Noam Chomsky, our involvement throughout the Middle East, even South America. And there was a point when I first heard about it, how outraged I was and learning and seeing it happen. But just like when you turn on the air conditioner, you can hear that humming, but after 20 minutes, you can't hear it anymore.
Right.
That cup of coffee.
So true.
Right away, you smell it, but then after a few minutes,
It disappears. Right.
Habituation.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Absolutely true. I mean, you bring up so many good points here. I don't even know where to start. I mean, getting back to the stuff you were saying about religion, I think is important, and I don't mean to dismiss it in any way, because I do feel what you're saying has truth in it. But I frame it a little differently. I you know, and it depends on the religion too, because like this guy, this theologian analyzed, each religion has certain texts that actually you look at it, it's problematic, right? But ultimately, regardless of what your quote-unquote religion is telling you, right, it's how do you behave as a human being? It's your responsibility.
You have to decide.
You have to decide. Are you decent? Are you going to show mercy? And if you're going to exercise justice, do you do it faithfully or with vengeance? Because vengeance is a darker side of justice. Batman will not kill, but he will bring justice, right? So there's limits. So there is moral order. In a world where there's moral order, there's self-restraint and self-imposed limits. We have to have them. This is the problem, is if you are a sick, corrupted person and you believe there's no consequence to you, you'll do anything you want. You will become a beast. Satan himself. Restraint. The meek shall inherit the earth. The meek are the ones who show restraint. The ones who have power, but show restraint.
Right. We've discussed that before. I believe it's the Greek of meek actually means the one that does not unsheath their sword.
Their hand is on the sword, but they
don't.
I believe that's what it means. I mean, you can double check and look it up, but yeah. I think that's right. The bottom line is, think about just yourself as an individual, right? Think about yourself. You're a father. You've been in many situations where you have maybe more knowledge than the other person, greater intellectual analytical capability. You're better at racquetball, whatever it is, right? Or you could show somebody up about something, but when you exercise restraint and you show a modicum of humility and decorum for the sake of the other person, that is a higher moral behavior. You're a more decent person. As a father, you can beat up your kids, right? You can show anger, that's a lower form of interaction than if you sit quietly with them, speak to them gently with kindness, and be patient. Which is better? Anybody will tell you the latter is better. Gentleness is better, is higher. Mercy is higher. Compassion is higher.
So as you're throwing out these qualities, in terms of belief systems, it seems that people will choose which ones, depending on their situation,
exactly,
works better for them, depending on right. the context. So for example,
correct.
My belly is full.
You can only be so merciful, right?
I have shelter. I can sit here and think
right.
and talk, and we can expound. Now, if I don't have my basic needs met, my belief system all of a sudden shifts.
That's right.
It becomes, there's something that happens and occurs
that's
based
right.
on context, based on situation.
Can I give you an example?
Yeah.
I literally came up with this example because of this dilemma that you just pointed out, which was absolutely beautiful. You can't sit here and have shelter and food and a full belly and be talking morality when you're out there in the cold and you've just been destroyed and been, you know, evicted and genocided or whatever it is, right?
Right. Should I now take the higher road and just continue to turn the other cheek?
Okay. There's a
belief system is going to change in that moment.
No, it's not going to change, because a true belief system allows for a response, but within limits. It again goes back to restraint. You cannot fight the enemy and then go and torture him and mutilate him and go hit innocent civilians. You only strike back to what has been taken from you, and you stop. Now, so there's limits. Now, listen to this example I came up with. This is a moral dilemma. Okay, I think you and I discussed this before. I'd like to share it now so that we can see if this context applies. Here's an example. Societal order has collapsed, right? You have two neighbors living closely side by side. Let's say two farms, okay? And there's nothing. There's no police. There's no civil society. There's not. Everybody's, you know, out on their own, right? It's like The Walking Dead, right? One neighbor happens to have everything. They have still their animals. They have a farm. They're able to produce food. They can.
They're self-sufficient.
They got, yeah, self-sufficient in every way. The other neighbor has unfortunately lost. They have no food. They have no livestock. The family have children who are crying and wailing every night, and they're dying from hunger. They can't even get milk. Nothing. Right? They're dying. They're starving. So this father from the starving family walks over and goes to the family that has an overabundance of everything, knocks on the door and says, "Hey, man, my children are crying every night. We're literally starving to death. Can you please share some of your food? I'll work. I will produce labor to pay you back." And he tells them to
go away.
Go away. He tells them to go away. So the guy's shocked. He goes away. His children are dying, so he decides one evening to sneak into the property and just steal some ears of corn, you know, steal some vegetables, and, you know, maybe try to get a little bit of milk, you know, steal some of their milk bottles from their barn or whatever it is, right? In the process,
he's discovered.
He gets caught. They take him, and they start to beat him up and basically, you know, tell him, torture him. They're going to kill him, right? Because he's now stealing. Now, when you apply moral order, you say, did he or did he not steal? The answer is he absolutely stole. The next question is, was it justified?
But nobody asks that.
No, but hold on. Was it justified? The answer is absolutely yes, it was justified. Right. Why? Because the behavior of those people, right, now trumps that moral injunction. Because they did not share when they should have morally. Therefore, stealing is allowed in that circumstance so he can survive. So if that leads to conflict, now here's what happens. He fights back. He breaks away. During the fighting, the combat, he accidentally kills the leader of that family.
Ugh.
Now, that the leader of that family is dead. Now, who's at fault? He accidentally kills him.
Accidentally.
Do you see where this is going?
Yeah.
Now, it's murky. But you can make arguments for what is right. And what I concluded...
Can a belief system... or a unified belief system solve this problem?
Yes, it can, and it does.
Let me
continue with this.
I have doubts.
My argument is this.
Can I just say why I have doubts? I have doubts because it's so contextually based. We could keep morphing this scenario. Forget religion.
Right?
We can keep changing this scenario where we keep justifying outrageous behavior that doesn't fall within the belief system. We have a unified belief system, but yet, for example, stealing. I'm sure in this scenario, stealing was considered bad from both sides. They both believe stealing is bad,
right.
But one has to break that belief system or...
Which is a greater evil, letting them starve to death or stealing? Which is a greater evil? Answer the question.
Obviously, I can't let people starve to
death.
That's a horrible evil. That's a tremendous amount of suffering versus stealing, which you are...
Stealing is a lesser evil.
From people who are already have an abundance.
Therefore, stealing morally is a lesser evil.
Okay,
now,
but this is... You have to be careful because that's a real scenario.
I know.
We don't... Okay, right now, in where we live, there are people who are hungry. And what if they came into your house? You would think, no, I have the right to defend myself and my family. Who is this person coming here?
By the way, great point. And that's where it gets murky.
No, that's happening right this second.
I understand.
And in our world, in our belief system, it doesn't matter if you're poor. There are other mechanisms and means that you should do.
But I'll answer that
question.
If
somebody feels like they don't have any mechanisms, they want to come into my house and raid my pantry, you know,
I would probably have to let them, but I would call
the police and... They might get prosecuted and there would be consequences.
I would say if all they want is food, take the food and I won't call the police. Because then I haven't done my fair share to give back enough.
Now, the next day, they come again. You filled your pantry, they come again.
No.
This is a different group of people that's also...
That caused a problem because how many times, right?
I'm just saying. Are you following...
I follow you.
Problems with...
I totally... But listen, there are... You're
well,
right.
The question was... does a unified belief system solve all these problems? It doesn't. It doesn't solve the problem.
Okay. Yes and no. And you're right. And this is why you need a legal system that grows out of the theological system in order to handle the complexity of the scenarios that come over the future of society, right, as it evolves. But I want to get back to the example. Your point is very good, and I think it can be solved. But you might need a legal system that helps apply it in different scenarios because, after all, theological revelation, you know, religious revelation has many dimensions to it, and some of it requires interpretation, right? So that's, I think we can agree on that. We can leave it on that. But to finish the example, the guy now, he's accidentally killed, so now there's a feud. Now
you're describing Les Misérables. This is Victor Hugo's Les Misérables. Jean Valjean, he steals a loaf of bread to feed his...
By the way, I've never seen
and
it.
And then ends up staying in prison for 20... You haven't read Victor Hugo's Les Misérables?
Or seen it. I know.
Oh, my goodness.
But you see, I came up with the same scenario because the human being faces these things.
Victor Hugo wrote an amazing novel about this.
Right, right.
It's guided by much of what we're talking about.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's worth a read for sure. But now, the family rises up and says, not only are we not going to give you food, now we're going to come kill your family.
Oh,
what
wow.
do you do then?
Oh, wow.
He just caused his own destruction. But his stealing was justifiable is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because that guy refused to share and he had food. This is a real moral dilemma, right? Because it has problems on both sides. So what I'm saying is that person, had he just shared, had he done his moral duty, right? This person could have been his helper, his partner, instead of leading to this horrific scenario where now you have one person is dead and they're about to genocide those poor people who are starving.
Yeah.
This is the human story.
And on that note, I think we better call it
a day,
a podcast. Well, if you were stimulated and engaged by this discussion, please like, subscribe, continue to listen. My name's Kuldeep Tagore.
And Amr Zeki here signing out. The QR Lab. We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organization's products or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.